Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atath Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Ditam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. This is going to be a long lecture. I propose stopping at 9 o'clock and starting again later, and whoever can come along later can come. So, the topic is some of my concerns about matters in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness today. What I'm going to speak about is specifically in response to a query that I got, but it has a much broader application than simply answering the question which had been asked by actually two devotees wrote me about this. The background is that some time ago, not very long, a few months ago, some devotees approached me in Bombay, and they'd heard one lecture that I'd given on Kshatriya spirit, and they were inspired to take up Kshatriya-type services. I don't know if it was just from the lecture or if that lecture further inspired them. And they asked, what did I think about the idea of starting a Kshatriya initiative within ISKCON. So I said, yeah, I think that's a good idea, and I referred them to Bhakti Raghav's. Hold your cough if you can. I referred them to Bhakti Raghav Swami, who is heading up Varnashram initiatives within our movement. So then a few days ago, I got a letter from another devotee, an aspiring disciple of mine, who proposed to join that project, and he gave some of the works that they're doing or they propose to do, and one of them was promoting the midday meals project within ISKCON. And I didn't reply very extensively, but I said that no, I don't think it's a very good idea you join that. It seems that the Kshatriya project is off course. I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly what I said. So then that devotee wrote back and now I'm coughing. I'm allowed to cough. You're not. Here, actually, that's the culture. So he wrote back and said that, well, he thought that, like, welfare activities felt, he could understand why ISKCON shouldn't do that or might not be expected to do that, but as this is a Kshatriya body which is operating within Varnashram, and that's a pious activity, welfare activities, and that Kshatriyas, one of the things they do is welfare activities for human society, that he thought it would be acceptable within that context. And I also got an email from One of the devotees who had approached me several months before starting this project, and told me some of how it's being very well accepted by ISKCON leaders, that midday meals is just one of the things that they have, many things that they wish to do. And he wishes to meet me to discuss and understand why I seem to have changed. So I'm going to speak somewhat extensively. Whatever I say, I could say more about this. Another thing I'm going to say now about all of this are things that I've not said before, and I've discussed some of these things with several of you, and some of them I've said in recorded lectures, which are out there on the internet. So it's not that I'm, like I said, it's not that I'm saying anything new in this regard, but I'm bringing together in one lecture many different points. I plan to write a book covering these topics in more detail, which is a better way to do things overall, to cover each point thoroughly with quotes and systematic reasoning, but it takes a lot of time, and I have many other writing projects. I should finish the ones which I've already started. So there are many important books I have to write. That's one of them, and it's some analysis of various problems or deviations within ISKCON, and perennial problems that are liable to perennially afflict our organization. I wanted to write a book, but now you could say I'm on the spot. That's an English saying, that someone's asked me specifically about this, and I should give them a satisfying reply, which can't be done in just brushing it off. Or you could just say, "Well, that's all nonsense," or something like that. These are serious devotees who they want to do something seriously in the service of Srila Prabhupada. I have a serious disagreement with what they're doing. So this lecture, if you hear it all, it might be discouraging. The aim is not to discourage, but the subject matter is such that it may do. But on the other hand, it should be spoken, just like when the doctor tells the patient, "You have cancer," it's not likely to make him feel better. To make him feel, if he tells him, "Well, actually, there's no problem. Just take some, that pain you have, just take an aspirin for the headache." If he's got a brain tumor, and tell him, "Take an aspirin." And, smile, it makes you feel good. You have to tell him, you've got brain cancer. So sometimes it's necessary to say things which are unpleasant. Otherwise they can't be. There's no question of rectifying them. What I'm about to say will, or already is, often considered to be, in the language of others, extreme right-wing, conservative, orthodox, fanatical. But actually my attitudes in Krishna consciousness, they were the standard in ISKCON when Srila Prabhupada was present. It was like universal, let's say. Why is that? Because Prabhupada inculcated in us the mood and the attitudes that I'm going to talk about. Although it may be called by various names, it's It's actually what Prabhupada taught us. Of course, others may dispute that. But like I say, I'm not writing a book, I'm giving a lecture, so I'm not going to go into very, very, very long analysis of all the points and counterpoints. A few years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, one of my godbrothers made the observation that nowadays in ISKCON, if you just say and do and act in the same way that we did when Srila Prabhupada was present, then you're called dinosaur fanatic or something like that. Which I thought was an astute observation. Something's wrong there. So, midday meals. You probably all know what this is. There's a program run by several of our ISKCON centers. Actually, I think it's not... They have separate trusts to do it, as far as I know. It's not done in the name of ISKCON directly. This was actually dreamed up by Sri Madhu Pandit Das of the Ritvik Center in Bangalore under the name Akshay Patra, which means undiminishable container. It's from Mahabharata Draupadi. Of course, Draupadi didn't have to go out and beg money because the patra was Akshaya by itself. It didn't. So there is a difference there. Madhu Pandit dreamed up this idea. And it was later taken up by various, what we might call, standard ISKCON centers in India, under the title Midday Meals. And the idea is to feed children, I think mostly at government schools, maybe non-government schools also, I don't know that much about it. I think mostly government schools, isn't it? To provide them with midday meals. And this is, the proponents of this program say that Srila Prabhupada said that no one within 10 miles of our temple should go hungry. This program has garnered tremendous appreciation from various quarters. People seem to like our movement much more than they did before. And they give us land and all kinds of things. It's said that people who wouldn't give for regular ISKCON projects, they'll give for this. So these are some of the benefits which I mentioned. So many people are getting prasadam, even non-Hindus, so that's the claim for the benefits of the midday meals program. Now, I want to give some background on this because, like I said, why am I against it? Well, I'm claiming that my attitudes are the same attitudes as that when I joined ISKCON, because when I joined ISKCON, I had faith that what we were taught is what Srila Prabhupada wanted, and that we should do what Prabhupada said, and I've stayed with the same attitudes over all these years. Now, shortly after Srila Prabhupada left this world, There was a body formed by some devotees in America, within ISKCON, which was first of all called ISKCON Public Relations, I believe it was called. But soon they changed the name to ISKCON Communications. I guess because public relations gives the idea that you're doing what's nowadays, you won't understand what this means, but if you lived in America or Britain, you would know. It's a spin job. In other words, it's publicity to make others people think good about you, even though it's not so good. And all, you know, big people like presidents of countries, they all have their experts with them who help them to present to the world. Just like, why, it might be asked, are American troops in Afghanistan? Well, you need someone to think up some story apart from the real one, because the real one doesn't sound so good. So that's the kind of thing that public relations does. It's meant for misleading people. It gives the impression it's not quite honest. So then the title was changed to ISKCON Communications, which sounds a lot more honest. Communications, like, you know, we just want to tell you what we're doing. Like, when we're just being open here. So the title was changed to ISKCON Communications. Now, two of the major initiatives of the ISKCON Public Relations, it was formed very shortly after Prabhupada left, was maybe 1978 or 79. Two of the things they did was to start the ISKCON World Review and to start the Food for Life program, which many devotees think was, it's often stated that Prabhupada started it. Srila Prabhupada had a program called ISKCON Food Relief, actually, which was, seems specifically in Mayapur. I don't know if it was ever anywhere else, and that was for giving prasadam to the many Bangladeshi refugees who had flooded over to that area of India at that time. So Food for Life was started, and within the ISKCON World Review, it was weekly or fortnightly newspaper which gave news of ISKCON activities all over the world. But it also sought to change the whole ethos of ISKCON. In one of the early editions, I remember reading this, and I tried to find the copy in which it's printed, but I couldn't find it. But I remember reading about, in the ISKCON World Review, they gave the idea of the Salvation Army. They said, because ISKCON at that time was quite unpopular, it seemed, especially in America. There was a lot of bad publicity, which it seems was largely due to our aggressive book distribution, which Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't against that, but it seemed to have created a lot of opposition, especially what was seen as the cheating tactics of the devotees in what's called the change-up, that the devotee would ask, could you give a big note and I'll give... When someone agreed to buy a book, they'd say, well, can you give a big note and I'll give you change, because I have so much change. And then, so someone would give $100, and the devotee would slowly give $10, $20, come down to $50 and say, hey, you know, you're a very generous person, aren't you? I think that's okay. You know, the person was maybe only wanting to give $10, and by some kind of trickery of being very forceful, like almost forcefully, they'd take a lot more money from them. And they'd give them extra books also, but people didn't like that at all. And in many ways, I mean, our movement was considered very strange, with the people going out and singing in the street. The world is much more cosmopolitan nowadays. In those days, if you didn't wear your hairstyles, short back and, you know, there was one hairstyle for all men. If you didn't wear your hair like that, you were considered something wrong with you. So what to speak about singing in the streets. Nowadays people like it, attitudes have changed, but many people like it. So our movement was quite unpopular. There were all kinds of accusations in the press about us being a cult, brainwashing people. So the ISKCON communications sought to change the image of ISKCON in the public eye. And they gave the example of the Salvation Army, which is a not very prominent Christian sect, which was founded in England in the 19th century. And what they did was, the Salvation Army, they would dress in quasi-military uniforms and go into public places and play music and sing songs, hymns, songs about God. And they got all kinds of bad publicity. People thought they were stupid. They're not doing anything. They're just otherworldly. They're not doing anything practical for human society. They should go out and get a job and do some work. And they were quite unpopular. So perceiving this, the leaders of the Salvation Army, they decided, okay, let's change our tactics here. Let's do some welfare work, and then people will like us. So it's true, their whole image changed, and people, their attitude toward the Salvation Army became much more favorable, and they started helping the poor, having shelters for poor people and things like that. The only problem is, which wasn't mentioned in the ISKCON World Review, is that you don't see the Salvation Army on the streets anymore singing their songs. Actually, I remember seeing them maybe once in my childhood. And if anyone at all thinks of the Salvation Army, which they hardly do at all because they're not a very significant sect, they think of them in terms of the charitable work they do. So they became better liked, but they lost their whole mission. I mean, they still have the mission of converting people to Christianity, but their focus changed drastically. So it was a good example if you consider that we also, our dharma is to go out in public places, sing the holy names, dress in unusual clothes. It's very similar in many ways. But the point that they lost their the Salvation Army lost their whole initial approach and attitude, and they became less of a proselytizing movement than a mundane welfare movement. That wasn't mentioned in the ISKCON World Review. In the ISKCON World Review was also quite bold in introducing within their pages, and it was sent free to all the temples. So everyone got to see it. And there was news, so people like to see news, you know, Rathiatra in this country, new temple opened in this place. But mixed up with that was they had an agenda to change ISKCON, and there were things like that. For instance, reviews of cassettes made by ISKCON devotees, and I remember reading one of them that the guitar style is Hendrixian. You don't know, those of you who are from the West can understand. It's in the style of Jimi Hendrix, who is some famous demoniac, actually very demoniac person. He made one album showing on the cover art, showed a picture of the universal form, but instead of having Vishnu's head in the center, it had his head. Then he had another one with all naked women on the front. You know that one? Electric Lady. Anyway. So, and then he died young of, he'd taken illicit drugs and alcohol. He was lying down asleep and he vomited and choked on his vomit. That's how he died. So it's praising this music by this devotee as being reminiscent of Jimi Hendrix. That's supposed to be a compliment. And there were like book reviews of secular or semi-secular books. So it's quite bold in that regard, and in that it brought in what we would not have dreamed of before. I remember, actually, I didn't think about this for years. I was just a new devotee. I wasn't a new devotee. I was newly in the movement. And I asked one of the devotees that, well, among all these rock groups and this and that, maybe some are like in the mode of goodness. And he said, no, they're all demoniac. That was my misconception in the early days. So that was the proper understanding, actually. There's rock groups are all demoniac. But now there was this, promoting rock music within ISKCON. It was very bold in those days. Promoting that we should interact with different groups like animal rights groups, and he would give news not only of ISKCON activities but of different people who are promoting reincarnation and all this and that. So it sought to make our movement accepted as part of normal society, and that devotees, they can be thought of as normal people with normal interests to a large extent. And which was quite different as, well, I see it, and it seems to me to be axiomatic that it was quite different to the whole ethos that Srila Prabhupada introduced, that we want to change society. We were opposed to this whole demoniac way of life. So it was more like becoming accepted by society on the terms of modern society by becoming or accepting many of the attitudes within it, and particularly by performing welfare activities, bodily welfare activities, and particularly prasadam distribution, which of course prasadam distribution is very good. Prabhupada wanted that very much, but promoting prasadam distribution in a manner that it's seen by the public as welfare activities for hungry people, for needy people, as it said. So that's the background of how, this is the background for pretty much all I'm going to speak about, how attitudes in ISKCON have changed. They were deliberately changed. Now, we may say, well, what's wrong with the midday meals program? Srila Prabhupada said no one should go hungry within 10 miles of our center. Any ISKCON center. Well, I propose that in the places that we're distributing prasad, no one is going hungry anyway. If in Bombay, Bangalore, Delhi, they're not going hungry. There are people who are poor, relatively poor, but no one is starving in the cities. What happens is that many people from poor families, they don't want to send their children to school because they think, well, they could go to work. We could immediately get some money from them if they're working, like, in a mechanic shop or a restaurant or, cheap dhaba, something like this. But if I send them to school, not only do they not bring any income, but We have to feed them also, as if they're working in a cafe or something, they'll get some food there. So the government's initiative to give schooling to all children was being undermined by the fact that many parents didn't want to send their children. They wanted them to work from a young age, which means there's also child labor, which everyone's against. Or many people in general are against child labor. They think it's simply exploitation, and the children should be at school so they can have a better future. Interestingly, no one complains when children appear in advertisements, which is also child labor, or when they appear in movies. They're required for parts in some of them, they become famous child actors. That's also child labor. But no one complains about that, because they like to go to movies, I guess. And without the kids to play the part, then how could it be? So, the midday meals is promoted. That you see with, so actually no one, people aren't going hungry anyway. I mean, everyone, it's not that people are starving. And if we provide meals to hungry people, to poorer class people, and then they'll spend the money on something else like drink or cigarettes or payment on their TV set or whatever. So Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said different things at different times. He didn't want, there is one quote in which he said that simply feeding the poor is nonsense. There should also be kirtan and some discussion of philosophy. If we only give food to the poor, Prabhupada said that's nonsense, because he didn't want, it's quite clear from his letters that Srila Prabhupada didn't want to promote ISKCON as being a social welfare movement in the way that it's generally considered by mundane people. Although sometimes he did say that, you know, distribute prasad and people will appreciate that, but it was never something that he promoted so much. Whereas nowadays people, they join ISKCON and they think that in some centers it's like the main activity. They don't have book distribution hardly at all, but they have the midday meals, and the devotees are sent to go out and collect for midday meals, not to distribute books or do Harinam as their main service. The advertising for the midday meals program, if you see their brochures or whatever, is that you see we're helping to build a nation that appeals to people, that we're building. But it goes, we're helping to build the nation by getting the children educated, we're giving children a good future. But that's completely against our philosophy. The idea of building the nation is totally mundane. The idea that we will build the nation by having more people educated so they can become lawyers, doctors, engineers, or more likely become factory workers. It's also the idea that we're helping people to improve, children to improve their life. And that's also mundane. I mean, the idea that they can improve their life in a mundane way, in a material way, is itself mundane. And that we want to help develop the present modern society, but that wasn't Prabhupada's program at all. His social welfare program was to develop varnashram communities where people don't have to live in this demoniac society. That was Prabhupada's welfare program. It wasn't that Prabhupada was callous to social welfare, but he wanted to do so through varnashram and varnashram education, that people would be educated according to their role in varnashram. So the advertising for midday meals is mundane. Yeah, Monday in mails. And you may say, well, it's just to induce people to give a donation for it. But the problem is that when we start talking like this, and people go out and speak to the pub, they go and meet businessmen and tell them, look, we're helping hungry children, we're building up the nation. And if you keep on repeating it and saying it again and again and again, you start to think like that yourself. And instead of following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, Jare Deko Tare Koha Krishna Upadesh, you're going and talking to people about mundane things. So it sets, it changes the whole atmosphere of ISKCON. Now there's also one, you could say, very successful program is in the Vrindavan area called the Sandipani Muni schools. They started one school, now they're starting three or four schools. It's not officially under ISKCON, but it's run by a devotee who is a member of ISKCON or something like that. He's initiated by Shivara Maharaj. He works with that. He doesn't like Shivara Maharaj, it seems. But many ISKCON leaders promote that. It's doing very good, giving education to children in the Vrindavan area. And collection is promoted by many ISKCON leaders for this project. Recently I was at a center in Canada, and I came out of the main temple hall after the lecture and saw there was a stall promoting this on the Sunday program, taking donations from the people attending. And I saw the brochure, which was meant for eliciting donations, and I took exception with that. I had a bit of an argument with the person who was promoting that program. Because the brochure had, the heading was, I am powerful. And this was the message that Sushmita Singh, who's a Bollywood actress, which, if we are to speak frankly, and in the language that Prabhupada used, which is not at all appreciated within ISKCON today, but she's just a prostitute, to put it straightforwardly. So she had come to the school, and her message to the children, to the girls especially, was that you should think, I am powerful, I can change the world. But you get an education and you can change the world. It's totally mundane feminism, and as I told this person, devotee or whatever, who was collecting for that, this is not Bhagavad Gita philosophy, this is Hiranyakashipu philosophy. I am powerful, I can change the world. So he said, well, you have to see, they're making them devotees. But what devotees with this kind of attitude? The devotee doesn't think, I am powerful, I can change the world. This is, like I say, Hiranyakashipu philosophy. Karta aham, I am the doer. I'm just giving an actual example of how, in the name of distributing prasad, and then he started off with distributing prasad to the poor people, then he got into other kinds of welfare work, and this is willingly promoted within our society as something very good. And it was mentioned that Sonia Gandhi, I believe, came to the opening of one of their schools. She came, and someone noted that, you see, what a great thing, you got Sonia Gandhi to come. She never came to any ISKCON center. Actually, she didn't. She just came there. She didn't visit any of the... Prabhupada said that about this Dr. Radhakrishnan. Was it Radhakrishnan or Nehru? I believe it was Nehru. Her grandfather-in-law, who came to Vrindavan. Prabhupada said he was such a rascal. He came to Vrindavan for the opening of the Ramakrishna Mission Hospital, and he never visited any of the temples. He just went back to Delhi. So Sonia Gandhi, can you see what a great thing she came to visit? But you say, well, none of our temples. She'd never come to any of our temples if she came to that. Well, that just shows where she's at. Because that's, she wouldn't come to any of our temples because she's another... maybe I shouldn't say this, as this will go on the internet. You can fill in the blank lines yourself. She is, after all, a powerful person. And it's... I don't want to make trouble unnecessarily for members of our movement by making statements that might not be appreciated by persons who have the capacity to make trouble for others. So the point, yes, you see that people are supporting and they like it and they give huge money. But it's support, yes, but it's for the wrong reasons. About Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was said that this is stated in Saraswati Jayashri. Anyway, I've also noted in this book, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that certain persons said about him that if he would have just changed his message a little bit and just had made some compromise, then all the Vaishnavas of Bengal would have followed him. There was no need for him to fight with everyone. If he just adjusted himself a little bit to them, everyone would appreciate him. And even many people who were opposing him, they would accept him as their leader. But he didn't. He remained Bhakti Siddhanta, not Karma Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta. And we bow our head at his lotus feet and thank Krishna for sending him, for being Bhakti Siddhanta and not Karma Siddhanta. There are so many who are promoting Karma Siddhanta, and who promotes this will be popular and liked, but they won't be Bhakti Siddhanta. So, we are getting support, and well, that helps us. We get permission for, if people are favorable to us, then we get permission for building temples, having festivals. But as I see it, it's something like happiness in the mode of passion. In the beginning it looks very good, but after some time you find that the result is just the opposite of what you thought it would be. That we saw in the 1980s, when in many parts of the world our devotees stopped doing book distribution and they started selling paintings and all kinds of different things, which were much easier to sell than books. Because if you give people a book which is about giving up sense gratification, who wants to buy a book about that? But if you give them sense gratification, then they'll buy it much more easily. So with the same effort, you get a lot more money. And with that money, you can give away books. And you can build big temples, which happened. You know, you never stopped distributing books, right? Through all of that. You were there in that time. And
can you buy a castle?
Yeah, buy big buildings, but in the end, because the devotees were not getting any spiritual taste by going out and telling people, here's the most popular paintings were paintings of dogs. So by saying, oh, this is a nice painting of a dog, by glorifying dogs instead of glorifying God, naturally, they were told, you see, we're doing it for Krishna, but they lost their taste and they thought, well, why don't I am doing it for Krishna? I'm doing it for what? I can do it for myself. So they got big castles, and all those big castles nowadays are empty because there was no spiritual basis. So in the same way, if we're all the time talking about building the nation, feeding the poor, I am powerful, I can change the world, we're not going to get the spiritual taste, and it won't be Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness won't spread, and we'll talk and think and act as welfare workers, and we'll become bodily welfare workers, just like, for instance, some time ago, I came to know, we weren't told about it, but I came to know through the backdoor method that, I had requested permission from the regional secretary or whatever they're called, local GBC, for one area, that there's no preaching going on in this town. We have no ISKCON center there. We'd like to send some devotees there to do some preaching. He said, oh no, actually there's something going on there already. So what we came to find out is that what was going on, there'd been a flood in that area recently, and our devotees had been there during the flood, and they were distributing packets of biscuits and what else, blankets and things like that. So why they should distribute biscuits, which is kami food, and it's just sinful food, and if you can distribute some prasada. And then after it had subsided, with so many houses destroyed, someone in America wanted to give a huge donation for building houses for all the people who, at least some of the people who had lost their houses. And he wanted to give it to ISKCON because he thought he can trust ISKCON to do a good job. So from doing food relief and then flood relief, and now they're building houses and just getting more and more entangled, because people think, well, that's what ISKCON does. Very good. They do a very good job. And so the energy of our devotees is diverted more and more into these activities. And people think, well, it makes us popular, but we lose our whole mission, we lose our soul. So we couldn't go there to preach because they were building houses for the homeless people. This statement of Srila Prabhupada that giving only food to is nonsense, there should be kirtan and katha, and so tell them some philosophy also. But so this midday meal things was, this came up for discussion, that isn't this mundane welfare work, is it like we're imitating the Ram Krishna mission or something like that? So and in the end it was decided by the ICC or something like that, regional RGB, regional governing body, the administrative umbrella body of ISKCON in India, that this midday meal program could go on, but it should, with every distribution of prasad, there should be kirtan and some speaking. But here's the catch, that you, because of this secularism in India, you can go and distribute, but you can't do kirtan and katha. So the very condition which they said to make it allowable isn't allowed. And when you advertise, you can't advertise that it's prasadam. You have to say that it's food, we're feeding the poor. Now, about prasadam, and that question comes up also, because I'm not sure if in all places those who are cooking are actually devotees, because, you know, where are so many, in many places we have difficulty even having devotees to cook for the within the temples, what to speak of huge capacity outside. And there's the principle, yeyata mang prapadyante tangstataiva pajamiyaham. Krishna reciprocates, right? So, I just wonder how much love and devotion goes into this mechanized process of cooking, because the midday meals are cooking for thousands of people, and it's all done by a mechanized process where you put in, the amount is measured by machine, how much rice, how much dal, how much water, press a button and then take it all out after, or it's all computerized and then it's packaged. It's the whole process is very machine-like, and it's just dropped off at the school by, in many cases, I think in almost all cases, by people who are not devotees. They're paid to do a job. So I just wonder, you know, prasadam, and the whole aim is anyway to, you know, the idea of feeding so we can develop the nation. I mean, does Krishna accept that? I wonder, you know, is Krishna obliged to accept it because we call it prasad? We have to call it prasadam. And that statement's going to get a lot of flack. So, it used to be in ISKCON that people would say to us, why don't you do social work? Why don't you build hospitals? Why don't you feed the poor? Well, nowadays, folks, we can say, we do, or they already know that we do. Here, I'm going to read from The Science of Self-Realization, just to give... it's quite shocking, actually, you might think, that Srila Prabhupada's response about... This is about specific instance where Srila Prabhupada was asked to perform social welfare work in what appeared to be a very worthy cause. This is... there was a letter came from the secretary of the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee, who wrote to Srila Prabhupada. It was during... there had been a drought throughout Andhra Pradesh. So the secretary of the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee wrote to Srila Prabhupada, "Revered Swamiji, the residents of the Twin Cities," that means Hyderabad and Secunderabad, "are happy to have this opportunity to meet you and your esteemed followers. You may be aware that due to inadequate rainfall during the last 2 years and its complete failure this year, more than half our state," that's Andhra Pradesh, "is in the grip of a serious drought. With a view to supplement governmental efforts to combat this evil, a central voluntary organization of citizens drawn from various walks of life has been set up. The members of this organization surveyed the areas affected by drought. The situation is pathetic. There are villages where drinking water is not available for miles. Due to scarcity of fodder, the cattle owners are parting with their cattle for a nominal price. Many of the stray cattle are dying away due to unavailability of fodder and water. The food problem is also very serious. Due to high prices of food grains on the open market, purchase of grains at market prices is beyond the reach of poor villagers, with the result that at least 5 to 6 million people are hardly having one meal a day. There are many who are on the verge of starvation. The entire situation is most pathetic and heartrending. We therefore appeal to your revered self to consider how your society could best come to the rescue of these millions of souls who are in unimaginable distress. The committee would like to suggest that members of your society appeal to the bhaktas attending your discourses to contribute their mite to the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund. The committee is prepared to send some of its representatives along with members of your society wherever you wish to distribute prasad to the hungry millions in the state. As Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, service to man is service to God, the committee is confident that even a little effort by your gracious society will go a long way in mitigating the sufferings of hundreds and thousands of people. Yours ever in the service of the Lord, T.L. Katidia, Secretary, Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee, Hyderabad, India." So it's very respectfully written about, as he's stated, a pathetic and heart-rending situation. The specific thing he asked for was that Srila Prabhupada at that time was giving public lectures in Hyderabad, and that after the lecture, that a request be made to the people in attendance to give a donation for the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee. That's all he asked for. He also suggested that members, that if ISKCON wanted to send some members, the committee would assist them if they wanted to go out into the afflicted areas and distribute prasadam. So that's the request. Srila Prabhupada's reply. My dear Mr. Kathidia, please accept my greetings. With reference to your letter and your personal interview, I beg to inform you that without pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can become happy. Unfortunately, people do not know who God is and how to make Him happy. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore meant to present the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly to the people. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 6th chapter, Tushte cha tatra kim alabhyam ananta adye king tayaguna vyatikarad iha ye svasid ha ha. The idea stated in this verse is that by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we please everyone and there is no question of scarcity. Because people do not know the secret of success, they are making their own independent plans to be happy. However, it is not possible to achieve happiness in this way. On your letterhead, I find many important men in this country who are interested in relieving the sufferings of the people, but they should know for certain that without pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all their attempts will be futile. A diseased man cannot live simply on the strength of the help of an expert physician and medicine. If this were so, then no rich man would ever die. One must be favored by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, if you want to perform relief work simply by collecting funds, I think that it will not be successful. You have to please the Supreme Authority, and that is the way to success. For example, due to the performance of Sankirtan here, the rain has begun to fall after a drought of 2 years. The last time we performed a Hare Krishna festival in Delhi, there was imminent danger of Pakistan's declaring war, and when a newspaper man approached me for my opinion, I said there must be fighting because the other party was aggressive. However, because of our Sankirtan movement, India emerged victorious. Similarly, when we held a festival in Calcutta, the Naxalite movement stopped. These are facts. Through the Sankirtan movement, we can not only get all facilities for living, but also at the end go back home, back to Godhead. Those who are of a demonic nature cannot understand this, but it is a fact. I therefore request you as leading members of society to join this movement. There is no loss on anyone's part for chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, but the gain is great. According to Bhagavad Gita, what is accepted by leading men is also accepted by common men. Yad yad acharati shreshthas tat tad evetaro janaha sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow in his footsteps. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. The Sankirtan movement of Krishna consciousness is very important. Therefore, through you, I wish to appeal to all the leading men of India to accept this movement very seriously and give us all facility to spread this movement throughout the world. Then there will be a very happy condition, not only in India, but all over the world. Hoping this will meet you in good health, your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, Srila Prabhupada refused the request to take a collection for the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund, even though that committee was composed of all very big important people who certainly would have become much more favorable. Prabhupada said that their attempt was Well, he used the word demoniac. He didn't directly say they're demoniac, but the implication is clear, that if you don't accept what I'm telling you, that you should, instead of asking us to help you, you should all come and join us. And if you don't accept this, that's because you have a demoniac nature. That was Srila Prabhupada's response. So, now, undoubtedly, he could have got, you know, all kinds of help from these people, that they would have asked, being the leading men of the state and of India, they would have, yes, please come, open your center. But Prabhupada replied in a manner that asked them to join him, but knowing that they're not likely to join him, but likely to not support him or not think of him favorably. But Prabhupada, that was his stance. He didn't think that we should become, or even help people in that way, even though they were suffering. You could say it was a much more valid case, you could say, than the midday meals program. But Srila Prabhupada refused to do so. So I'll finish here for now, and we can resume a little later. I guess I'll need